There's a line in every city that separates the rich from the poor, the strong from the weak, the haves from the have-nots. It's a street, the train tracks, a river, a sidewalk. It's time to cross the line. Serve the City is a global movement of volunteers showing kindness in personal ways to people in need. We are the connection between the good intentions and talents of people who could volunteer and a meaningful opportunity to get involved. Serve the City is for everyone. It's a revolution, a serving revolution. And it's going to change the world. Cross the line. Serve the City. Welcome to Serving Stories, a podcast from Serve the City. Hi, I'm your host, Ani Deal. Come with me for a moment, back to 2019, to a garden party given by the Irish president at his home.
One of the words that occurs nearly in every language and in every belief system is the word hospitality. And it is about the moral significance that attaches to how you see the other person and how you welcome the stranger. And in countries like Ireland and peoples like Ireland who are migrant peoples, with the experience of people going away and coming back, to and fro and whatever, this word has an enormous significance.
This word hospitality did, in fact, have enormous significance for one of the guests invited to the garden party that day. This guest was Lucy Alexia Dubé, who arrived in the Republic of Ireland with her three sons as an asylum seeker from an African country in 2010. As she hung on every word of President Higgins' speech, she could not help but agree with him.
But the one thing I think we must all learn is not to do anything to increase or exploit the vulnerability of those who have come from a war-torn area, who have come from hunger, who are escaping gross poverty or whatever. And we are lifted and enabled, and we are better Irish people the more that we do.
To hear these words of support from the president after 9 years in Ireland encouraged Lucy about change to come. It pictured the possibility of a better welcome for refugees than she herself had experienced on her arrival.
When I arrived in 2010, I just felt that there was really no support. And I think the people that were entrusted with integration really had no know-how or understanding of where we came from and what our culture was. The cultural competence was just not there.
On Lucy's arrival, she was settled in a direct provision center, a government-run residence for asylum seekers, in Athlone, a town in the very center of Ireland. It is not a region that would have been used to dealing with many outsiders, let alone foreigners from Africa. And arriving in these circumstances becomes even more difficult as a parent coming with children.
You know, when you come to this country and you realize that there's a lot that children go through in the sense that discrimination happens in schools, racial abuse as well, you see online, children exposed to that. Some of them even moving to new centers now are welcomed by people who are saying, go back to your country. So it's not an easy space to be a child right now at the moment in the Republic. And unfortunately, it's upon the parents to ensure that these children are empowered, they feel engaged, they feel like part of those kind of communities.
However, Lucy is far from simply complaining about how refugees are treated. She has become part of the change President Higgins exhorted that day in the garden party, especially for asylum seekers with children.
I just felt that there was a gap in the sense that there was no transition in the parenting styles that existed from my country of origin and what exists here in the Republic of Ireland. And going through the years living in direct provision, and also after I completed my psychology learning in college, I realized that there's a lot that goes into parenting as opposed to how you parented yourself.
After getting her degree in 2017, Lucy began working with the Brothers of Charity as a community connector. She also eventually started her own social enterprise to train migrant families in direct provision centers, helping them adapt their parenting styles to the new culture. And last month, she just started working with yet another organization.
Yes, I was very, very interested and fascinated about Share the City. When I read about some of the stories and the impact that you have in communities, it actually made me realize that there is such a platform to actually make that difference and to follow my purpose.
Lucy applied for a job as a parenting facilitator with Serve the City's CARDIS program. Ronan Coffey, the director of Serve the City Ireland, explained what CARDIS is at our Serving Stories live event last October.
One of the programs we run in Serve the City in Dublin, we call it our CARDIS program, and CARDIS is the Irish word for friendship. And this is a government-funded program. It's a soft skills training program. Basically, it's an integration program for refugees, migrants, and asylum seekers. And we started this during COVID, a little bit new to us and very raw in the beginning. But we were incredibly lucky. We were able to recruit a brilliant team of professional life coaches, and that's how. As well as general coaching and training, we were able to give one-to-one training.
Lucy is now one of the brilliant professional life coaches Ronan referred to.
So I'm so fascinated the fact that I have the opportunity to change what I've always wanted to change for myself as a parent, with the new parents coming in. And what a better time to actually be involved with Service City, a place that encompasses or embraces the one aspect of compassion, you know, which is something that we, each and every one of us, should actually dig deep inside and just, I suppose, cultivate it, because it's something that we need on a day-to-day basis, especially for groups that are marginalized or groups that are going through torment, like migrants coming into the country now at the moment.
And Lucy knows well about the torment migrants face coming into the country and why they need compassion. Trouble and difficulty did not end for her when she left her own country and came to Ireland in 2010. For the first 3 years of her stay, she was housed with her children and 360 other asylum seekers in a direct provision center, made up of 100 mobile homes. She was not allowed to work. She was not allowed to pursue education. The days were long and monotonous. She was often told by the center manager what she should not do regarding her parenting of her three boys, but never received support to transition well. And then, after 3 years and 2 months, Lucy was finally given the right to work and study and to move into rented accommodation in the town.
So I finally got my residency then. I was lucky enough to get accommodation within a month. So I moved out then. But there is no integration then into the community. Like, it was the first time in an Irish house in 3 years, right? So I didn't know what a radiator was, how it worked. And the house I lived in was out in Athlone, is like a countryside. So the house I lived in used coal to heat up the radiator, like a back boiler. So when I moved in, the landlady said to me, look, I just made the fire, because it was November, it's in the middle of winter. So I made the fire in the fireplace at the back. That's where the back boiler is. That means you to heat your water, you to heat your radiators in the house. So you have to keep the fire going. I said, okay, that's no problem.
But it turns out it was a problem. And not just the problem of learning how to use a coal boiler to heat your water in your house when you have never even seen one before.
I realized when I moved in this house that I wasn't going to get any assistance in terms of paying the rent, because my name wasn't on the list yet. I was supposed to wait until my name was on the housing list for me to be able to qualify for housing assistance. So I was down 135 euros every week.
Out of what was left after rent, Lucy had to pay for food for her family, the coal for the boiler, electricity, and anything not supplied in her furnished house. And then there was the problem of transportation for her two school-aged children, who finished school at 2 o'clock, but whose school bus home only left at 3.
So I spoke to the school to try and keep them for the hour, and they said no, because of insurance reasons, they couldn't keep them in the school. So that meant, it said that I woke my 7-month baby from his sleep and took a bus to pick the boys up every day, or got a taxi to do that for me, because it was the middle of November and it was really cold. So I got a taxi driver that said to me, look, I can do that for you, but it'll cost you 7 euros a day, just for the evening part. So it cost me, I think I paid 60 euros a week for transport.
On such a limited budget, 60 euros a week was a small fortune.
After paying for the transport and paying for, because I have to buy electricity every week, I only had 20 euros between myself buying the bag of coal and me buying bread and milk for the children to take for their lunches and stuff. It was a terrible 2 months until that was rectified.
With only 20 euros a week and not enough bedding in the house to stay warm in the winter, Lucy wrote to the social services to ask for assistance. A social worker came to the house to see how much bedding was needed.
And my two boys used to share a bed. The other bed was empty because I couldn't afford to have them sleep separately. There was just not enough bedding. And she said to me, I can only give you money for one bed that's got no bedding. That's all it seems like you need. I said, but I need more. I don't have enough. And she said to me, no, that's all we can give you, 25 euros.
How much bedding can you buy for 25 euros?
And I remember when she was going down the stairs and she felt the heating on her way out, the radiator. And she said to me, sure, there's no heating in this house. And I said, well, I can't afford to keep the house heated when I'm on my own before the boys come back from school. So I always wait until they come, then we make the fire there. And I remember she looked at me and she said, I bet you now wish you were back in direct provision.
Lucy suddenly saw herself and the rest of the migrants through this social worker's eyes.
I could never forget her words because it made me understand that, you know, when Irish people that don't understand direct provision and who we are, look at us as people who come in to milk the system, that we get free heating and direct provision, we get free food, we get our children taken for school. And for us, we are in for the freebies. And when we move out, it's they just think now is the time for you to actually feel how we feel.
And doesn't that dispose of one of those awful negative pieces of nonsense that used to occasionally flow when we saw people different to ourselves? They don't want to work. The fact of the matter is that people, when it became possible for people to apply for the right to work, the uptake was immediate and the uptake was very, very significant. In one centre, as he suggested, 70% of the women, in fact, actually working. In another, something like 38 out of 56 of the people who were there, and others going on to third level education. And that is what we want to see happening.
So I made sure that when I move out, and I'm in the community, that I'm not going to justify or make it seem like what they thought of me is true. So I went back to education and I pushed myself and I pushed my boys and I say, you have got to make a name for yourself. You have to live above the stereotype. You have to live about that stigma that was tied to you when you were in the center. Because if you leave that center and you still live as if you're in there, it's just confirming what they think about you, think about me. So that's why I am where I am. And I am humble because I know where I come from, but I have achieved a great deal. And I'm very, very proud of all my achievements.
This is the purpose of the Cardis Friendship Program, to help people shake the stigma and the stereotypes that attach themselves to migrants and refugees by helping them learn soft skills that will enable them to integrate themselves into the community. Ronan Coffey, the Serve the City Ireland director, told us the story of one such refugee at our Serving Stories live event last October.
Hello, I'm Ronan and I'm from Dublin. My story concerns one of the programs we run in Serve the City in Dublin. We call it our Cardis program. We also run the graduate program, and we call our the participants graduates when they go through the course. It's a 3 or 4 week training course, and we have a little bit of a celebration to celebrate with them. Now, one of the individuals I met at one of these events, I'll call him Pete, and Pete is from sub-Saharan Africa, and he was so enthusiastic about this training course, and he had learned so much about Irish life and culture and society, and he was really bubbling with enthusiasm. It was fantastic. So he said to me, he says, I was contemplating suicides. He said, I could not see any end for me. I couldn't see any hope. He said there was nothing for me. He said I had come to the absolute end. So he was in a pretty dark place. So it was great to hear that and his appreciation. And he was bubbling with life and enthusiasm. It was fantastic. But he also told me, and this really got me, one of the elements of the training course, we sometimes help our graduates with writing their CVs, their curriculum vitae, or their resume. And he told me that traditionally in his country, the more you put in your CV, the better. So you'll write volumes and volumes and volumes about what a wonderful person and all your achievements and all your life heretofore. However, in our country, you know, a 1 or 2 page resume is absolute max, because if you give a tomb, it'll go in the bin. Employers just won't. So he had been applying. He was entitled to work. He'd reached the stage. He had his work permit, and he was applying for work. He was applying for all sorts of things, you know, security, cleaning, warehousing, and wasn't getting anywhere. And he was a bit frustrated at this. But his coach had gone through his resume with him and filtered it out and picked out the salient points. And hey presto, within a couple of weeks, he was employed. He got a job as a security man in a local supermarket, and he was delighted. But other people in this accommodation centre noticed that, hey, Pete's got a job, and we've been applying for jobs, and we're not getting anywhere. So they asked him, you know, what's the secret? So he sat down with them and went through replicated exactly what he had been taught on how to fine-tune his resume. And lo and behold, 6 of them from that got work. I mean, so we had no idea when we had started this program that there would be a multiplication effect. And it was just so heartening. And I think the value for me in that whole thing is hope, that where there was no hope, and then there's hope. And not only the hope, but the hope has been multiplied and replicated. And that just, you know, inspired me.
The chance to give the same hope to others is what fuels Lucy Alexia Dubé in her drive to help new migrant families arriving in Ireland. But she is also inspired by the example of the one person who showed her true compassion on the moment of her arrival, an immigration officer named Declan Feeney.
My hero. It wasn't until I lived in Derry Provision that I went back and I realized that of all the things that I went through, the racism, you know, the stereotypes, that Declan was the one person who I can go back and say he never had that. I remember there was a time where my youngest wanted to use the bathroom, and he said, "Don't worry, I'll take him to the bathroom. It's just over there. If you stand over here, you'll see where it is." And I did that, and it just didn't feel like I was dealing with an immigration officer. You know, in my country, any form of power or anyone in uniform would really make you feel as if they have power over you and you are this small. But I didn't feel like that with Declan Feeney.
Declan's compassion struck Lucy from the very moment of her arrival.
Before I left my country, I was at a place where I had to be numb to what I was feeling, because I just needed to be that strong for my children to be able to get out. I couldn't let myself feel anything. So when I got to the airport and the first thing that Declan asked me is, "How are you?" It felt like I haven't been asked that in a very long time. And it felt like this is the time where I can really say what it is that I'm feeling, you know, to someone who is so foreign to me, but yet someone who's seriously asking that question from the depth of his heart, because you could see this lady coming in with the 2-year-old, 11-year-old, and a baby on my back. So when he asked me, "How are you?" he genuinely meant, "How are you after a 19-hour flight with these small children?"
As Declan guided Lucy through the official questionnaires, he described for her in detail the process that she would go through in a way that made her feel like a person.
I never forgot Declan for that reason, because even all the years, like I said, I met people who were really not nice, Irish people, that really made you feel as if you did not belong, and said it to your face so many times that even after all that, I always went back to Declan Feeney. I thought, how was he so different to me? What did he see in me that these people cannot see in me?
one of the anchors that sustained Lucy in her goal of creating compassionate connectedness for other migrants was this memory of the way she had been treated by Declan in those early days.
He was so welcoming that even in all the hardships, in all the battles of trying to get your residence in this country, trying to get yourself integrated and all, and meeting all the different people, the fact that that welcome that I got in this country was full of compassion. Nothing will faze me anymore. He just gave me my energy to say, I'm going to push and push. And here I am today. And I'm thankful to Declan Feeney.
As Lucy mentioned previously, the compassion Declan showed was not the norm in the immigration services at the time she arrived. This was especially challenging with regard to parenting styles, which differed a lot from her home culture.
And so I personally felt as if I was told all the wrong things that I should not be doing regarding my parenting style, as opposed to, you know, really guidance. For instance, the center manager would always highlight the fact that we are never to leave our children alone in the center unaccompanied. And in my culture, we encourage at a very young age, we encourage independence, we encourage children to go out there and be brave and can navigate at a very young age. For us, it's not neglect, but here it is viewed as neglect because children have to be under a microscope all the time. You know, what you'd call your helicopter parenting, which does not exist from where I come from. You know, so that's one of the challenges that I found, that I wasn't really able to give my children the platform to say, you go out there and you navigate on your own. I had to always be with them.
Another challenge for some parents new to Ireland is that corporal punishment has been against the law there since 2015, whereas it is not only legal, but normal in many countries they come from.
What I find mostly when I do these parenting courses with parents is they will tell me, look, when we're transiting, say from Abu Dhabi to the Republic of Ireland, we're able to spank our kids. But when I hit the Republic of Ireland, I'm not allowed to do that. But then what do I do then in place of that? And I do encourage parents to say, look, there is always a new way to learn, but you need to be supported every stage. And I go there and I know that I'm also learning from the experiences because I've lived here 13 years now. So many things that I used to do before, I don't do anymore. But I should understand, I should take myself back to 13 years, how I was like when I first came.
And there is also one particular traumatic experience that Lucy had that motivates her to make sure the parents she coaches never experience what she went through. It was 2022, just after COVID. By now, she had four boys. The oldest had left home already, and the youngest, named Amani, was 8 years old. Lucy was just dropping him off at school and preparing to head to work when the principal and vice principal came out to her car and asked for a word with her.
And they said to me, oh, actually, we were in class and we were talking about what children do at home in the spare time, what games they play. And Amani said to us that he and his brother play this game. And the challenge is if they win a game, they get so many points. But if they lose, then they get into trouble with you. And I said, oh, and I was laughing. I was like, I've heard them talk about this game and I never thought anything about it. And then they said, but we have had to ring social services and the guards.
The guards is what the police are called in the Republic of Ireland.
And of course, my face dropped and I said, oh, am I missing something? And then the principal said to me, well, your child said they get into trouble with you. And we asked him, how do they mean they get in trouble with you? And they say to us that they get into trouble with you because you hit him with a belt. Like, I'm so happy that I can laugh about it now. And my jaw dropped. And they say to me, we are all for watching out for the children to make sure the children are safe. So I think what's going to happen is social service is going to ring you. The guards are going to ring you. And I said, okay, all right.
Lucy was totally shocked. She never practiced corporal punishment with her boys. And now it was assumed she was beating them. She decided to talk to her older son, Shane, and find out what was going on with the video game challenge.
So I sat down with my other son, who Amani is playing this game with, and I said, I made a cup of tea, and I said, you have a cup of tea, let's sit down and have a chat, casual chat. I said, tell me more, I want to know more about your game. I'm so interested, because I wanted him to really tell me exactly what is it that I'm missing, right? So he went on and he said, So if I win, I get 100 points. And if Amani loses, then he gets into trouble 100 times with you. I said, okay, so when you say get in trouble with me, what exactly do you mean for that? Oh, mommy, it could be anything. Realize, no, look, just be specific. What did the game say? What did Amani believe this get in trouble is? Oh, yeah, you know, say maybe you can hit us, maybe with a shoe or maybe with a belt. I said, but Shane, do I hit you? No, mommy, it's just part of the game. It's just the game.
Before long, Lucy received a call from social services to ask if they could come see her and the boys. She was calm and positive with them on the phone, but inside, she was terrified.
Every single day, then, is like you're thinking, what's going to happen? You've heard stories of people, children being taken away, and you think, am I going to be one of those children? Am I a bad parent? And you know what happens then is during the time that you're waiting for this, you're doubting everything you do, which is so unfair.
Fortunately, on the day the social worker came, he was more like Declan Feeney than the woman who would not give the family extra bedding.
He was a very lovely gentleman. So there's also two sides of the social workers I found that time, right? And as much as I had anxiety and everything, when he came in, he said to me, look, I know, I can see that you're worried. What I want to say to you is your children will not be taken away. I've already assessed your home. I've seen your children when you came in with them. There's so much love in this house. There's absolutely nothing that I can see that will make me write a report to say I have any concerns.
The social worker interviewed Lucy and her boys and told her again that he could see no case and that it was the last time she would ever hear from him. But there was also a separate case that had been opened with the guards, who called about a month later to say they were going to visit. Lucy got a friend to be with the boys as she could not be in the room while they were interviewed. But she heard everything while sitting on the stairs outside. The guards first questioned the two middle boys, aged 14 and 13, and then they came to Amani.
And then they asked him, so tell us about this challenge that you're doing. And then he was excited talking about the challenge. And if I win, I got 100 points. And if Shane loses, he gets into trouble 100 times with my mom. And so how does Shane get in trouble with your mom? Oh, yeah, you know, in the challenge, we can say that Shane can maybe get a beating from a mom. And then because I have won, so I don't get any beating at all. Oh, does your mom beat you? No, 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 no. It's only for the challenge. You see, if Shane doesn't win, he gets a beating with a belt or he gets a beating with a shoe. And he went, and I was freezing when I was listening to this.
The guards continued to question Amani about the so-called beatings and asked him if he wanted to go live with his dad.
And then they say, okay, but we just want to know that are you happy to stay here or you want to live with your dad? Or because if your mom beats you, then you cannot be in this house. You have to be in a place where you're safe. And he says, I don't want to live away from my family. I want to live with my brothers and my mom. I didn't say my mom beats me. I said in the challenge, we say that my mom is going to beat you so that the challenge is exciting, that Shane is scared to lose and I'm scared to lose. They did not listen to that.
The guards told Lucy that Amani would have to travel to Dublin with an adult other than her to record a video that would be admissible in court. This was done, but the process took an eternity. The initial complaint was lodged in March, and it was the beginning of September before the guards showed up at her door again. Once more, they asked her to leave the room while they questioned Amani on whether he was happy to stay with her.
And then they asked Amani to call me, so I went into the room, and then they said to me, look, we're going to close this case because we can see that Amani is happy now. There's no concerns from our side, and we just want to let you know that in this country, you're not allowed to hit children. I said, but I didn't. And they said to me, if you keep denying that, we're going to reopen the case. And I said, okay, all right, okay.
The ordeal was over, but the trauma of it remained.
It was tormenting. Psychologically, it did affect me as a parent. It took me a long time to get my feet on the ground again, to be competent enough to say to myself, I am, you know, a good parent. My boys need me to parent them as effectively as I can, to create those boundaries and to create them and prepare them for the world out there without giving in to too many things. It took me a while, but some people never come back from that. They never come back. They never are the same parents after this interruption of that family structure.
This experience of stereotyping and of being falsely accused made her want to prevent that trauma for other migrant families. It was also the impetus for the creation of her social enterprise.
So that's why I tried to say, with my case, it was a near miss. But a lot was taken away from me during that time. So I was just trying to make sure that the parents don't go through what I went through. Because what you should know is we are stereotyped. Anything they say, they hear or assume we do, automatically they think we're able to do it. You know, as a social entrepreneur, there's got to be something that pushes you to become a social entrepreneur because it's not an easy road. Some of the rewards are not, obviously not financial, definitely. I'm not in this for the money, but I'm in this because I want to make an impact. I want to help parents not go through what I went through. I would have explored other avenues in terms of people coming to the country, being migrants, because there's so many challenges that they face. But I wanted to just focus on the parenting aspect of it. And the reason why is because, you know, we have this role to carry forward our norms, our culture, but also integrate into the society. I think the first important thing that you have to highlight is that these parents are not bad parents and that there are resources available for them to utilize. The resources might not be what they're used to, what they want to hear, but in essence, it will help the children transition.
Now Lucy is helping these newly arrived parents by showing compassion to them in the same way Declan Feeney showed it to her when she arrived, by asking them questions and really listening to their answers.
I think the most important thing is just to say, before starting to say, this is our parenting island, I always ask him, how were you parented? If you ask how they were parented before you start saying, this is how we parent, you can't like, you might realize that you don't even have to do much. It's all about, okay, that's very interesting because this is what we do here. And also just to listen more. That's what I do in the training. Like if I have my slides put up, you think, geez, there's only five slides, but even if it's for an hour, it's more about me listening. I'm not assuming that, you know, this is what they're going to say to me. I'm going to listen to each and every one of them. Like I said, even in my country, we have different tribes. In those tribes, parenting is different as well. So even in the centers that you go to, it might be Asia, Africa, you know, or the Eastern European maybe, but in those countries, there's tribes, there's different ways. So I always just ask that question, how were you parented? And how have you heard of this style of parenting?
Some parents, parented by authoritarian methods in their home culture, find it difficult to imagine other ways. But Lucy gives them the gift of learning how to listen with compassion to their own children.
One thing I teach is the whole idea of communicating. You know, when I was growing up, my parents used to tell me what to do. I never went back to them and tell them how my day was. That's how it was, right? And I always say that has to change. You have to communicate more with your children. I think with communicating, you get to understand who they really are. And when you understand, you find that you are parenting someone who's almost like your friend. Not that you treat them as a friend, but because of the openness and the willingness to come and tell you exactly what happens in school. It's so interesting. There were so many things there I wanted to tell my parents when I was growing up, but I was just never asked how my day was. You just get up in the morning and be happy and thankful that you have a school uniform and shoes and food and a roof over your head and off you go. Anything else didn't matter. And that being said, it was okay that time because I was in a country where I was like every other child. I was not discriminated. I was not bullied. But my children experienced that. So I should be able to listen to them. And as much as I have no experience with that, I should be able to say, whatever it is you're going through, I want to hear it because I want to listen to you.
And I must say to those who come from the direct provision, it is one of the pieces of confidence that you must have. Make sure to tell your story. I often think of those Irish in America, how long it took them to be able to say how it was that they had come to be in the different cities that they came. But you must make sure that you take your story and your experience, painful or unpainful. I've said that our planet is a migratory one. The big difference, some people choose to travel places, other people are forced to go. We are all here now. We are all here now.
Lucy was invited to the president's garden party not only because she was one of those helping asylum seekers and refugees, but because she had the bravery to share part of her story with the world. It started out as a book for her son.
So my book, it's titled For You With Love. It's dedicated to my eldest boy. So I have four boys, right? So my aim is to write four books in my lifetime, each dedicated to my four boys when they turn 18. I have decided that I don't have any money to leave them as a legacy, but I'm going to leave them something that they can read as years go by.
Lucy decided that though she has spent most of her years as a single parent, she wanted to write a book for her oldest son about his father, who died when he was 30 and Lucy was only 23. When her son received the initial manuscript, he was the one who suggested that it be expanded and published.
I suppose the reason why it got so much publicity and even the president invited me to come and hand it over to him is because of the fact that I came from an immigrant background, you know, and I came to the country as an asylum seeker, living in direct provision, having overcome all those hardships. And then in the end, finally writing and publishing a book. And it is quite great from that aspect. So that's why it got that magnitude of publicity.
Lucy came to that garden party with her eldest son as her plus one and presented her book to President Higgins. Listening to his compassionate speech on how asylum seekers could be of benefit to Ireland strengthened Lucy in her resolve to contribute with compassion to the newly arrived. It's why she works with CARDIS in Serve the City Ireland to see friendship extended and received and passed on to others.
And that's one thing I always do with the parenting training that I do. I always make my parents listen to the speech that the president gave, because the whole garden party was based on people supporting refugees and asylum seekers in Ireland. So they were addressing us asylum seekers. I was an asylum seeker then, only then. That's all I was. But now I'll go in as a social enterprise catering for asylum seekers.
Now, Lucy is an Irish citizen, a successful social entrepreneur with a widely sold book, and an expert parent coach. The Irish Times recently named Lucy Alexia Dubé as one of the 50 people to watch in 2024.
I often would say to myself, is there anyone taking a list of all the skills that are arriving in Ireland and all the skills that are going to be available now and into the future? And all the young people with energy, with wonderful stories of different places to be put into the rich tapestry that will be the story of Ireland's life in the future. And this is the direction that we must go in.
It's so heartfelt because he talks about migration and immigration in Ireland going back centuries, and how Irish people always have been a migrant country, and now it's our turn to be kind to people coming into our shores. And I think if you listen to that and you manifest it, nothing else matters.
Thanks for joining us on Serving Stories. If this story inspired you, please share it with someone else to encourage them, and subscribe, rate, and comment so others can find it as well. We also encourage you to visit our website, servingstories.net, where you can see pictures from this week's stories and links to Lucy's book and website. And on our sponsorship page, you can indicate your interest in being an episode sponsor or make a donation. I have been your host, Ani Deal. Serving Stories this week was written and produced by Shannon Deal, aided by the marvelous Frankie Granger, our editorial assistant. Sound and technical production are by Parker Deal and William Munier. Our logo design is by Jeremy Malengro. Special thanks to Lucy Alexia Dubé for sharing her stories with us, and for Ronan Coffey, director of Serve the City Ireland, for introducing this remarkable lady to us. Do check out Lucy's website, alexiapresshub.ie, and her book, For You With Love, also featured on servingstories.net. Thanks also today to the Genless sisters, Eloise and Mathilde, who allowed us to use their amazing Celtic music from their album, Land of Legend, for our soundtrack today. Check out their music at genlysisters.com or through the links on our website. We will be back soon with stories of courage from the chaotic nation of Haiti, where Serve the City leaders work to rescue children from a life of modern slavery. Keep on serving and sharing your stories.